What? What? What?
I know how we can run everybody out of Rock Ridge.
How?
We'll kill the firstborn male child in every household.
Too Jewish.
Shalom and welcome to the Too Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together today of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning is Deborah Meyer, founder and CEO of Moving Traditions, an extraordinary organization that works with young people on the issues of gender and self-development in Judaism and Jewish education. We'll also have a visit from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Please email your comments to us at TooJewishRadio18@gmail.com or visit us on the web at TooJewishRadio.com. The opinions of the host and guests on Too Jewish are their own and not those of the radio station. Too Jewish is paid for by Too Jewish Radio Programs and Podcasts, Tucson, Arizona. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Too Jewish.
Shalom. It's a beautiful spring here in the Sonoran Desert in Tucson, Arizona, where I live. The air is warm and embracing. Trees are green. There are blossoms everywhere. Birds and bees are flitting about, and allergies are running rampant. This year's brief baseball spring training is in full swing, and if you are outdoors now, it feels good to be alive. Except, of course, for those allergies. All of which means the springtime holiday of Passover, the Chag HaAviv, must be coming up soon, and it is. A bit less than 3 weeks from now, April 15th, we'll begin to celebrate the Festival of Freedom, thematically the most central of all Jewish holidays. In a season in which a war of aggression to suppress freedom is raging in Europe, this year Passover takes on even deeper meaning. The word freedom is incredibly powerful, but sadly, even tragically, it has also come to be used in irresponsible and demagogic ways. Freedom means many things, but it does not mean the absence of responsibility to other human beings. The Jewish conception of freedom is that it represents the ability to choose whom we will serve. That is, instead of being dictated to by an evil person or an oppressive institution, what we will do or who we will do it for, we may choose to serve God and our people and our values. There are many kinds of slavery in this world. Roosevelt's Four Freedoms still resonate today, 80 years after he first proclaimed them. Freedom from fear, freedom from want, freedom of speech, and freedom of religion. The absence of those freedoms represents forms of slavery. But there are other kinds of freedom that are denied today and thereby enforce servitude. Brutal invasion by a foreign army and Putin's attempt to dominate or destroy Ukraine represents one form of attempted slavery. Being prevented from voting in free elections is a different kind of violated freedom, a destruction not only of free speech but of representative government. Homelessness and deep poverty destroy human freedom in awful ways. Being a refugee and having lost your home, well, that's a form of servitude by anybody's definition. Having necessary medical care denied by an insurance company is a serious and damaging limitation of freedom. We need to understand, however, that liberation from all restrictions, including our obligations to public health and to supporting a government of laws and justice, well, that's not freedom at all. It is simply anarchy. For Jews, freedom means the ability to decide to serve God and our ideals with integrity and commitment. And Passover, coming April 15th, tax day, when in America we usually complain about our absence of freedom, of course, reminds us that we have rights but also the obligation to choose to live to those ideals with integrity. And so to play us in this morning on this theme of freedom in Judaism, from our pre-Passover preview of Pesach music, it's a Jewish-African-American musical collaboration entitled Let My People Go. Halach Ma'anya, this is the bread of affliction from the Seder.
Halach Ma, Halach Ma'anya, di achalu, achalu avahatana, be'ara, be'ara, adin Mitzrayim, be'ara, be'ara, adin Mitzrayim, kol bichin yeh,
Yisaf. Hashata Ha'afa Lishana Haba Be'ar Adi Yisrael. Hashata Ha'afa Lishana Haba B'nei
That was Halach Ma'anya. This is the bread of affliction. Now we may still be slaves, but next year may we all be truly free. Well, from the Passover Seder, which is coming up a little less than 3 weeks from now, Pesach begins April 15th, join us at Beit Simcha for Second Night Community Seder, Saturday night, April 16th. Our theme is freedom with an outstretched hand, helping refugees on this great festival of freedom. Go to BeitSimchaTucson.org or call 520-276-5675. That's 520-276-5675. Our guest this morning is Deborah Meyer, founder and CEO of the cutting-edge Jewish organization Moving Traditions. Meet her when we come back in a moment on Too Jewish.
We are the soul of Tucson. We are your neighbors and friends. Our commitment to provide the very best relies on the finest products and services you, our community, has to offer. Together, we make Tucson thrive. When we win, you win. Casino del Sol, the soul of Tucson, enterprise of the Pasquayaki tribe.
We are delighted to welcome the Too Jewish, our guest this morning, Deborah Meyer, the founding CEO of Moving Traditions, which has worked on gender issues in important ways for a number of years now. She is retiring as CEO, mazel tov. That's my goal in life. My professional goal is to retire. We are exploring really new areas of gender identity in Judaism, and I want to talk about that as well. Good morning and welcome to Too Jewish.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be with you.
Tell us about Moving Traditions, where it came from, and how it has changed.
Sure. We launched Moving Traditions in 2005, and the idea was that Jewish education should actually help preteens and teens figure out who they are and how to live their lives in our world today. Kind of an obvious idea in some ways, but it really wasn't part of the Jewish curriculum to do that, and really we thought it was super important.
You know, as a rabbi, done a lot of teen education. There have been a couple of pilot programs in the Reform movement exploring sexuality, for example, or gender identity. But I don't want to say they're part of any core curriculum, and I wouldn't say they're necessarily wildly successful. No offense to the people who developed them. Is that the kind of need that you guys were answering?
Exactly. And we wanted to do it for every teen. So this is not just for gay, lesbian kids or trans kids, but for each and every human being. In adolescence, we're asking questions, who am I? What is the world telling me? And how do I figure out how to be a friend, be romantic with somebody? How do I deal with pressures in my life? And sexuality and gender identity are just core parts of us as human beings. And so we felt it's essential to really address the whole teen, drawing on Jewish values and teachings. And I think that's the important piece. When we just have a special program to talk about things kind of in an unusual, one-off way, it doesn't really go very deeply. And so we really wanted to connect ancient Jewish wisdom with very contemporary, leading-edge understandings about positive youth development. And that's what we've done, and it's been amazing be successful, I have to say, with absolutely no humility. But really, it's been really, really heartwarming and very heartening to see how relevant Jewish community can be to teens when we bring it to them and create conversations which are honest and authentic. And we don't tell teens what to think, but we give them the opportunity to explore who they are and the world around them.
It's a fascinating area and one that I think has been sorely neglected in Jewish education for a long time. We will talk much more with Deborah Meyer about moving traditions, how personal identity develops in working with the various programs that you guys have when we come back in a moment here on Too Jewish. Congregation Beit Simcha, the House of Joy, a wonderful Jewish synagogue in the Catalina foothills and northwest Tucson, celebrates a great array of services, classes, and events this spring. Established by passionate, caring congregants and me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, Beit Simcha has created a vibrant, vital community that strives every day to serve God with joy. Beit Simcha is open to everyone throughout the metropolitan area, providing weekly Shabbat services, youth and adult education academy courses, social justice opportunities, outreach, and cultural Jewish programming in northwest Tucson, the foothills, the whole Tucson area, and online. Join us in person for Shabbat services Friday night or Saturday morning, or come on Facebook Live. Go to our website, BeitSimchaTucson.org, BeitSimchaTucson.org. Call 520-276-5675 for more information. Beit Simcha Synagogue is located at 2270 West Ina Road on the north side of Ina, just west of La Cholla, near the entrance to the Foothills Mall property in our own building. Services, classes, and events are open to everyone. Join us in person Friday night or Saturday morning. Email rabbi at BeitSimchaTucson.org, BeitSimchaTucson.org. Or join us every Friday night on our Facebook page. Shabbat evening celebration services are at 6:30 p.m. Saturday Shabbat morning services are at 10 a.m. Torah study precedes them at 9 a.m. on Zoom and in person, all with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, leading them. Facebook page is Beit Simcha Tucson, BeitSimcha Tucson. Our services with full music are in person and also by virtual experience. All of our Adult Education Academy classes, and there are a bunch of them, are live and on Zoom. You can access those. Email me, rabbi at BeitSimchaTucson.org. Our wonderful religious school is available in blended format too. Some students live, some coming on Zoom. Join us for Passover this year, freedom with an outstretched hand. We celebrate with a magnificent second night community Seder at Beit Simcha, Saturday, April 16th at 6:30 p.m., led by me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. It'll be full and delicious Passover meals, and more importantly, a powerful affirmation of freedom and hope in this season of Pesach. Go to BeitSimchaTucson.org to sign up, BeitSimchaTucson.org, or call 520-276-5675. You can donate there to Ukrainian Refugee Relief as you sign up for our second night Seder. For more information about Beit Simcha, to attend services, our great religious school and Torah Tikes programs, bar and bat mitzvah, confirmation and high school programs, and rich array of adult education academy courses taught in person and on Zoom, and of course all of our services live and on Facebook, go to BeitSimchaTucson.org, 520-276-5675, that's 276-5675. BeitSimchaTucson.org, BeitSimchaTucson.org. Join me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, in the fastest growing Jewish congregation in all of Arizona in its exciting beginning years. If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, a kvetch or a kvel, please email us at tojewishradio18@gmail.com. That's TOOJewishRadio18@gmail. Or visit our website at tojewishradio.com. You can hear all past and present shows through the website, streaming us from there, or downloading us from the Apple iTunes Store as very popular Jewish podcasts, top 10 in America, according to Moment Magazine, over 175,000 downloads on Podbean. Madeleine Albright, first U.S. woman Secretary of State, helped steer Western foreign policy after the Cold War. She died last week at the age of 84. Fascinatingly, she lived the first 59 of those years without knowing that her parents and all of her ancestors were Jews, and she was born Jewish. Madeleine Albright was a central figure in President Bill Clinton's administration, serving first as U.S. ambassador to the U.N. before becoming the nation's top diplomat in his second term as Secretary of State. She championed the expansion of NATO, pushed for NATO to intervene in the Balkans to stop genocide and ethnic cleansing, sought to reduce the spread of nuclear weapons, and championed human rights and democracy across the globe. In a New York Times op-ed she wrote last month, just before Russia's invasion of Ukraine, Albright argued that Russian leader Vladimir Putin would be making a historic error invading Ukraine and warned of devastating costs to his country. Instead of paving Russia's path to greatness, invading Ukraine would ensure Mr. Putin's infamy by leaving his country diplomatically isolated, economically crippled, and strategically vulnerable in the face of a stronger, more united Western alliance, Albright wrote. Born Maria Jana Korbelova, the daughter of a Czechoslovak diplomat, in Prague in 1937, Albright escaped then Czechoslovakia with her family 10 days after the Nazis invaded. Her experience growing up in communist Yugoslavia and then fleeing to the U.S. made her a lifelong opponent of totalitarianism and fascism. She was raised Roman Catholic, though she later converted to being an Episcopalian at her marriage, but later learned that her family had Jewish heritage. Albright's parents hid their Jewish identity from her. Her parents converted from Judaism to Catholicism in 1941 during her early childhood while still in Czechoslovakia in an effort to avoid anti-Jewish persecution before they later immigrated to the U.S. They never discussed their Jewish ancestry with Madeleine Albright. When the Washington Post reported on Albright's Jewish heritage shortly after she became Secretary of State in 1997, Madeleine Albright said that the report was a major surprise. Albright said she did not learn until age 59 that both of her parents were born and raised Jewish. As many as a dozen of her relatives in Czechoslovakia, including three of her grandparents, were murdered by the Nazis in the Holocaust. Madeleine Albright was an important presence in American foreign policy for most of a very significant decade in world affairs. The stories we share last a lifetime and are passed down from generation to generation. Known for our compassionate commitment to the families we serve, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has faithfully served the Tucson community and the Jewish community for over 100 years. We help thousands of families plan and carry out celebrations of loved ones in unique and special ways and assist them in sharing those lifetimes of stories meaningfully. The most beautiful and tranquil final resting place in all of southern Arizona, Evergreen's tall pines shade peaceful grassy fields. You can count on Evergreen for superior service and the highest degree of integrity. Our informative, well-trained staff is here to assist you with a full range of on-site services. Call Evergreen, 520-888-7470, 520-888-7470. While we serve the whole community, our experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. We have sections dedicated to all religious faiths, can help you arrange for your future needs or your immediate ones. Whether you choose to hold a traditional funeral service or a completely individualized ceremony, either in person or online or both, our goal is to help you create a meaningful, personalized service based upon your unique needs in a place of reflection, tradition, and serenity. Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best to the community and to you. Call 520-888-7470. To speak to a family advisor at Evergreen, call 520-888-7470. We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
We've been talking about history and the way that history affects things, particularly Jewish history, and memory is an important part of that. And sometimes those memories are true, and sometimes there's a little bit of myth involved in that history.
Right. I think sometimes there's a very fine line between history and mythology. And the example that comes to mind is, you know, I do this podcast series, and I'm just concluding my research on Denmark. as the fourth of the Nordic countries that I'm covering. And one of the enduring images that most Jews all over the world have of Denmark is the king and queen standing on a balcony and declaring that if Jews have to wear a yellow star, we're all Jews. We're wearing yellow stars.
Right. And it's a famous incident, right. Supposedly.
Right. And, you know, we sort of elevate to near hero status the king of Denmark and also the king of Bulgaria, who saved...
King Zog, right? Yeah. No?
He was Albanian.
Oh, sorry, I get confused.
Boris.
King Boris, okay.
The Bulgarian case was also not entirely accurate in the sense that Bulgaria annexed some neighboring territory in the late 30s. And the Jews in those territories that were not historically part of Bulgaria were not saved. So they stripped King Boris of some posthumous award from Yad Vashem or whatever because he only saved 98% of Bulgarian Jews, not 100%.
Not 100%, all right.
Still a pretty good record, but not good enough, apparently. In the case of Denmark, the Danes actually did a remarkably good job and a heroic job of shuttling the vast majority of Danish Jewry, I mean like over 90%,
right,
across the Sound to Sweden, which was a neutral country. There were no Germans there. And they saved more than 90% of the Danish community.
Including somebody I worked with for years, Judy Meisel, in Santa Barbara, who founded our preschool, and she had been saved in that. It was like overnight, really over a weekend, I think. They got almost everybody out.
Right, right. But the scene of the king and queen standing on the balcony and pointing to yellow stars, just complete myth, created by some PR agency after the war to burnish the image of Denmark. And it's funny that we all believe that. It's one of the myths we grow up with, and only when you check it do sources unanimously say, this is a myth. And so it leads you to wonder how much of what we believe to be history is really a myth.
Yeah, that doesn't mean you shouldn't learn history, and it doesn't mean we shouldn't study it, and it definitely doesn't mean we shouldn't explore those myths and see what underlies those ideas, but you got to be a little bit careful about what you believe.
Right. And, you know, I'm from Missouri, which is the show me state.
Yes,
so
it is.
It's best to approach a study of history with a certain degree of skepticism, like show me.
I highly agree. And, you know, there are still lessons to be learned. Thanks so much, Tom. We'll talk next week.
I look forward to it.
It's time now for our old Jewish joke of the week, Jewish humor your Bubby and Zadie knew, brought to you by Too Jewish as a public service. After 12 years of therapy, my psychiatrist said something that brought tears to my eyes. He said, "No hablo inglés." That was the old Jewish joke of the week, special feature of Too Jewish, just for you. You should live and be well, and I hope your therapist speaks English. And now a word of Torah. This week we read one of the least appetizing portions of the whole year, Tazria, in the book of Leviticus. It contains instructions on the treatment for a truly horrible ancient illness, leprosy, that still exists in this world, although it isn't much in evidence in America these days, thank God. Of course, we have other illnesses that create fear and dread now. Tazria delineates the ways in which we are to treat those individuals afflicted with a terrible, frightening disease, one our ancestors regarded as contagious. The methods specified, basically sanitary conditions and quarantine, are still in use today, of course, and are often considered state-of-the-art medical means to control infection, like, you know, coronavirus. In the Torah, there is no moral valence placed on those who are ill. People infected with this dread affliction are not considered to have brought it on themselves through any bad action or error. Rather, they are simply unfortunate and are isolated for their own protection and for that of general societies. In the ancient world, this was cutting-edge treatment for the infirm, far ahead of what most cultures would do, even millennia later. In our own world, as we must be aware by now after 2 years of pandemic, we do not always treat those who are gravely ill with frightening illnesses very well at all. You may remember back when the AIDS epidemic began, there was general panic about how to treat those infected. And with no justification, many individuals were ostracized from schools, neighborhoods, and society in general. When COVID-19 started, we often flailed in our attempts to control the spread of the virus. And even now, 2 full years after things got bad, we have a variety of different and somewhat incoherent ways of responding to the issues that remain. In that sense, we're probably not much more advanced than our Israelite forebears were 3,000 years ago in our Torah portion of Tazria, and they didn't have vaccines. They instead turned to God for help, but they generally treated those who were ill with compassion and care, and with respect and intelligence. We might learn from them today, and perhaps we should. When we come back on To Jewish, our guest, Deborah Meyer, the founding executive director of the remarkable Jewish organization Moving Traditions, explains how they help young Jewish teens and preteens affirm their personal identities in important ways. Find out in just a moment how they do it on To Jewish.
We continue with our To Jewish update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
Singapore will upgrade its presence in Israel from consulate to embassy in the latest move reflecting thawing relations between Israel and Muslim countries. Israel and Singapore forged diplomatic ties back in 1965. They've enjoyed friendly relations for decades. Israel sells Singapore defense equipment and has had an embassy in the country since 1968. However, Singapore, not a Muslim nation itself, is nonetheless mindful of its huge Muslim-majority neighbors, Malaysia and Indonesia, and has sought to keep its Israel ties out of the public eye. Israel's defense minister, Benny Gantz, visited the country last year, but kept it quiet. Now Singapore is openly boasting about its Israel relations. Vivian Balakrishnan, the Southeast Asian city-state's foreign minister, made the embassy announcement last week in Jerusalem, where he was meeting with Israeli counterpart Yair Lapid. The new embassy will be in Tel Aviv. The advent of the Abraham Accords in 2020, normalizing ties between Israel and four Arab nations, has eased the stigma of open ties with Israel among nations sensitive to Muslim sensibilities. Since the launch of the Abraham Accords, not only has Israel normalized ties with the United Arab Emirates, Sudan, Morocco, and Bahrain, it has improved existing diplomatic relations with Egypt, Jordan, and Turkey. The Biden administration is committed to expanding the Abraham Accords, one of its few areas of agreement with the Trump administration. Along the same lines, Israeli Prime Minister Naftali Bennett paid a surprise visit to Egypt last week. He conferred with Egyptian President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi and UAE's Crown Prince Mohammed bin Zayed al-Nahyan. In much worse news, a Bedouin Arab terrorist killed 4 people at a shopping mall in Beersheba in what Israeli authorities are describing as a terrorist attack. The man injured at least one other person in Beersheba. The attacker hit and killed a cyclist with his car, then left the car at the mall and stabbed 3 people to death before being shot to death by a bus driver. The dead included 3 women and a man. Police are searching for a second assailant. Reports say the attacker was an Arab-Israeli citizen and a Bedouin. The Hamas and Islamic Jihad terrorist groups praised the murders, but did not directly claim responsibility. There have been repeated calls by Islamist terror groups for knifing attacks on Israeli citizens in recent weeks. This was the 3rd such stabbing attack in Israel in a week. In America, Orthodox Jewish advocacy groups are launching a long-shot bid to stall the bipartisan bill making daylight savings time permanent across the U.S. In a letter sent to congressional leaders, the Orthodox Union warned that the bill, passed by the Senate last week by unanimous consent, will interfere with the ability of members of our community to engage in congregational prayers and get to their places of work on time. Jewish law requires shacharit, daily morning prayers, to be recited after sunrise. Making daylight savings time permanent means later sunrises and later sunsets, of course. In winter, sunrise in some U.S. cities might be after 9 a.m. Rabbi Avraham Gornemer, a member of the Rabbinical Council of America, said even if observant Jews choose to pray at their workplaces, they could face penalties, might complicate their ability to do their jobs. Senator Marco Rubio, the Republican from Florida, one of the authors of the Sunshine Protection Act, first introduced back in 2018, maintained that permanent daylight savings time will prevent pedestrian accidents, reduce crime, and decrease seasonal depression and childhood obesity. Yay. Rabbi Abba Cohen, Vice President for Governmental Affairs at the umbrella Orthodox group Agudat Yisrael, said the leaders were caught by surprise with the swift passage of the bill despite communicating their views with Rubio's office when it was reintroduced last year. Cohen added he was equally surprised it passed by unanimous consent, rare under any circumstances, especially these days in a Senate divided 50-50 between Democrats and Republicans. Options to act at this point are limited. Rubio, a longtime supporter of Orthodox and religious causes, has already overseen its passage in the Senate, but Agudat Yisrael has nonetheless already launched an effort to lobby members of the House of Representatives, which will take up the bill for a vote, you know, sometime. Representative Frank Pallone Jr., a Democrat from New Jersey who chairs the House Energy and Commerce Committee, which oversees time change policies, said it could take weeks or even months before House leadership brings it to the floor for approval. Our immediate goal, Cohen said, is to at least slow it down so we have an opportunity to have our views known and, frankly, an opportunity to join with allies in trying to fight the bill. Cohen maintained that despite waking up late to the process, daylight savings time, or opposing it, remains an issue worth fighting against. He said a similar fight in 2005, an alliance with industry representatives and education activists against a two-month extension of daylight savings time, resulted in the House agreeing to only extend it for 4 weeks. Nearly 50 years ago, Agudat Yisrael also fought a bill that would enact year-round daylight savings time as a two-year experiment. Back in 74 to 1975, Congress repealed it after the first year. And finally, Yunus Nazarian, an Iranian Jewish community leader and self-made billionaire philanthropist, died in L.A. He was 91. Nazarian was a pro-Israel advocate who gave millions to organizations in Israel as well as to Jewish and non-Jewish causes throughout Southern California. Nazarian truly believed strengthening Israel was the only key to the future survival of the Jewish people, said Jimmy Delshad, former mayor of Beverly Hills. Nazarian was born in 1931 in Tehran's Jewish ghetto to David and Golbahar Nazarian, children of Georgian survivors of pogroms and immigrants to the northwestern Iranian town of Urmia. Following his father's death in 1935 when he was just four, Nazarian and his older brother Parviz grew up in poverty as their mother worked as a seamstress. As a young boy, Nazarian worked selling and replacing light bulbs in the alleys and bazaars of Tehran. He moved to Israel after the country's founding with his mother and worked with his brother in the construction industry. Nazarian subsequently returned to Iran and started a construction business, paving new roads in undeveloped Iranian towns and provinces. The company obtained major road, bridge, and civil construction contracts. Later, the two brothers formed a company importing and distributing throughout Iran various construction machinery and parts from Europe, America, and Israel. Following Iran's 1979 Islamic Revolution and the fall of the Shah, Nazarian and his family fled Iran and settled in L.A. Numerous family members lived for months in three rented hotel rooms. He lost everything when he came to America, his son Sam said. He was 49. I never once heard him talk about what we had, what we lost, what we used to be. I would hear that from my parents' friends, but never from my father. Using money owed their company from European buyers, the Nazarians bought an aerospace manufacturing company in downtown L.A. In 1984, they co-founded the technology company OmniNet, which joined forces with Qualcomm in 1988 to develop a satellite messaging system for long-haul truckers. In 2010, Nazarian's stake in Qualcomm was worth $2 billion. Nazarian supported Jewish and non-Jewish philanthropic causes. His foundation made donations of $5 million to UCLA, helping establish the Israel Studies Program in 2005 and the Eunice and Soraya Nazarian Center for Israel Studies. So many institutions and people were beneficiaries of his kindness and generosity, often without knowing he was the donor, said David Siegel, former Consul General of Israel to the Southwest and current president of the European Leadership Network and a past guest of Two Jewish. They influenced Iranian Jews to be more inclined and supportive of Israel's well-being, said Dariush Fakhari, former president of the International Judea Foundation, an L.A. area nonprofit group. May he rest in peace. And that's the Two Jewish News of Jews round the world. The stories we share last a lifetime and are passed down from generation to generation. Known for our compassionate commitment to the families we serve, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has faithfully served the Tucson community and the Jewish community for over 100 years. We help thousands of families plan and carry out celebrations of loved ones in unique and special ways and assist them in sharing those lifetimes of stories meaningfully. The most beautiful and tranquil final resting place in all of southern Arizona, Evergreen's tall pines shade peaceful grassy fields. You can count on Evergreen for superior service and the highest degree of integrity. Our informative, well-trained staff is here to assist you with a full range of on-site services. Call Evergreen, 520-888-7470, 520-888-7470. While we serve the whole community, our experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. We have sections dedicated to all religious faiths, can help you arrange for your future needs or your immediate ones. Whether you choose to hold a traditional funeral service or a completely individualized ceremony, either in person or online or both, our goal is to help you create a meaningful, personalized service based upon your unique needs in a place of reflection, tradition, and serenity. Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best to the community and to you. Call 520-888-7470. To speak to a family advisor at Evergreen, call 520-888-7470. We are delighted to welcome back the Two Jewish. Our guest this morning, Deborah Meyer, is the, retiring CEO. Is that the right term? Of Moving Traditions, an organization that works to give Jewish teens the capacity to discuss identity, sexuality, relationships in ways that I think conventional Jewish education and Jewish settings haven't really been able to approach, which is fascinating because the truth is Jewish tradition from the Bible onwards has no great shyness about discussing these issues. Why do you think it had kind of been suppressed so much within our own institutional structures?
I think that Jewish life has been extremely vibrant and meaningful to many people inside the sanctuary. We've really learned how to bring vibrancy to our prayer experiences. But paradoxically, Judaism is really about what does it mean to be a human being? And in some ways, we've almost limited the experience to the congregational building. And we really wanted to bring Judaism and Jewish teachings out into the world. And I think this is a correction. You know, I think the pendulum swings. And I think we're looking more and more about how do we find meaning and connection in our whole lives. And Judaism and Jewish community can offer a great deal to us, and especially to adolescents as we're forming our identities and figuring out who we are in the world.
Tell us about the notion of, instead of calling it bar mitzvah or bat mitzvah, b'nei mitzvah, bi mitzvah, is that just a superficial change? Tell us about how that developed.
Sure. the whole experience, I think, needs to be kind of rethought through. It's wonderful to have a ritual and a moment of teaching Torah and showing your competence at the Bima, but it really is a moment when children are becoming teens, not really in our day and age becoming adults. And we have a greater understanding now about gender, that there are people who identify very clearly as girls or as boys, but there are others who are less gender conforming. And, you know, they might consider themselves non-binary or use other terms. And we, as a Jewish community, want to always be as welcoming and celebrating of all human beings as we can. And so the evolution has been sort of bar mitzvahs only for boys. Oh, let's add bat mitzvah. Maybe we should look at the group and call it b'nei mitzvah, which is a plural. And now bi mitzvah really allows us to be b'mitzvah in the mitzvah and not limit it in terms of gender identity.
Moving traditions, when it began, was it focused more on girls and girls' identities?
We started with a program for girls, and it really spread like wildfire because it really hit a place of resonance for people in meeting girls, Jewish girls, with Jewish teachings that addressed their full lives. But I really wanted to do something for boys as well. At the time, nobody was helping guys to think about what does it mean to be a person beyond your professional life? What does it mean to be a partner in a loving relationship? What does it mean to be a parent? How else might I want to express myself in life? And so I hired Jewish men to help me to do the research and to create the programming that would really meet the needs for Jewish boys as we had been meeting the needs for Jewish girls. And we created a program called Shevet, which means tribe, and has really had a deep impact on thousands of boys who get together with about 10 other guys and an adult mentor and play games, debate, and talk about issues they care about in their lives.
It seems that there's a great focus on trying to address the level of sexual harassment in places like camps. We're seeing some of that in synagogues as well lately. And that's to be commended, but it's a little late if that's the major focus instead of trying to develop healthy relationships. How do you see that evolution?
I love the way you framed that question, because I do think it's about, if we want to change the world, we want to do it from a proactive, positive point of view. And we want to say, what does it mean to be in a respectful relationship? What does it mean to treat each other as a human being, to see each other, B'Tselem Elohim, in the divine image? And unfortunately, there is sexism, and there is sexual harassment, and there is a long, terrible record of women being objectified and men using power and sexuality over women. And it's unfortunate and excruciating and is deep-seated, and it needs to be addressed. And I really commend the denominations for beginning to look at the experience in their camps and congregations and in other communal locations. And it's something that we need to continue to work on so that we really can treat each other with respect, with equity, and provide safety.
What are you proudest of in your experience at Moving Traditions?
I am the most proud when I hear a preteen say that experience showed me that the Jewish community cares about who I am. I am most proud when I hear a Jewish girl tell me that I go to services because I find meaning in the service, having talked about issues in my life and my Rosh Chodesh group. And I feel most proud when I hear a teen say, because of my Kol Kolenu fellowship, because of moving traditions, I feel like I can work with other Jewish people to make a change in the world. It's really about the experience we've created for thousands of Jewish kids so that they do find meaning and connection. They feel strong in themselves, they have strong relationships, and they feel connected to Jewish life. And it's really about those experiences that make me feel that the work has been, worth the dedication of all the years of my life, and it gives me hope for the future because it shows me that we really can continue to create meaning and connection in Jewish community.
Do you think that there's been a movement younger and younger in the development of relationship identity? I mean, we used to think about this as something that happened with teens and adolescents. Now we talk about preteens. What age does that start to develop?
Well, I think the influences of the outside world have really penetrated at earlier and earlier ages. That's absolutely sure. Culture is incredibly prevalent everywhere. And with social media, you have younger and younger kids who are in locations without adult supervision. And so I think it's really important to talk to kids of every age. I mean, once you're born, you're developing, and kids are sponges. And I think it's really important for parents and other adults to provide all kinds of opportunities for kids in an age-appropriate ways to think about who they are and to see other human beings as in all of our differences as valuable. And I think what parents and educators can do is to listen to kids and give them the opportunity to develop in their own ways and follow their own hearts.
Have things changed in the time that you've been doing Moving Traditions based on the level of social media engagement with teens and the kind of relatively unsupervised experience that presents to lots of kids, preteens as well?
The pressures and challenges of being an adolescent are the same as they always have been, times a million. Social media and just the opportunity to come across pornography, just to stumble across it.
Sure.
Or if not pornography, then just highly sexualized content. I mean, there's just so much out there. And unfortunately, even though in TikTok and Instagram and other platforms can be a source of creativity and connection, so they're not all bad. Unfortunately, they can reinforce the most negative challenges facing adolescents, so that hyper vigilance on showing myself, developing my persona. What do I look like? Do I look good? Isn't it my body, my fit? It's very challenging. And, I think what adults have to do is not deny the positive aspects of social media, but to help kids talk about what's difficult and what's real.
A funny question, and I'm not sure it's entirely related, but attitudes towards Israel have changed really dramatically with kids on campus. A lot of older Jews don't like to acknowledge that or see it as sort of subversive. Has Moving Traditions explored any of those questions?
We have always given teens a space to talk about the issues that concern them. And we've also really helped preteens and teens engage in difficult conversations. And I think the skill set we need to build is to listen to each other and to be able to tolerate differences. And so we've focused on building strong identity, Jewish identity, and giving kids the skills to manage difficult conversations and to explore and be able to talk about what they care about and to listen to others. I think those are really critical building blocks. Moving Traditions is now engaging in a process of figuring out how we can bring the conversation about Israel more directly into our programming. But we want to be able, again, not to focus on what the facts, what's true, what's not true, but to help teens uncover information and be able to have conversations and be able to stand with confidence as Jews within those conversations.
So a personal question, you've led Moving Traditions for a long time now. How does it feel to be moving beyond that, passing the baton, as it were?
Fortunately, I'm really excited about it. This is something that I planned for with the board. I feel that the organization, Moving Traditions, is in a really great place right now. We have very strong programming, a terrific staff and board, and Shuli Karkowski, the new CEO, is a talented and incredibly thoughtful and dynamic leader, and I have full confidence that she's going to take the organization forward and reach many more Jewish preteens and teens. So feeling that kind of confidence makes me really happy to pass the torch.
And so what's next for you?
I'm going to be doing a little bit of R&R, relaxation recovery. The last couple of years of the pandemic have been
stressful for everybody. Yeah. Can we say that safely?
I think we're all a little tired.
Oh, yeah.
But I'm looking forward to taking on projects. I'm serving on the boards of the Covenant Foundation and the Hadassah Foundation. And I'm looking forward to continuing to contribute to Jewish life in the way that I can.
I want to thank Deborah Meyer for a great visit here on Too Jewish. Where can people go to find out about Moving Traditions and about you too?
MovingTraditions.org. And thank you so much. I really enjoyed the conversation.
My pleasure. Thank you so much. When we come back on Too Jewish, we'll hear about next week's guest get a final musical play out.
We are the soul of Tucson. We are your neighbors and friends. Our commitment to provide the very best relies on the finest products and services you, our community, has to offer. Together, we make Tucson thrive. When we win, you win. Casino del Sol, the soul of Tucson.
Enterprise of the Pasquayaki Tribe.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Join us next week. Our guest will be Alan Winter, author of the dramatic new novel, The Sins of the Fathers. Don't forget, join us at Congregation Beit Simcha in person Friday night for services in Oneg Shabbat starting at 6:30 p.m., Saturday morning too, 9 a.m. Torah study, 10 a.m. services, Torah reading and Kiddush, live in person and on our Facebook page, Beit Simcha Tucson. And sign up now for our fabulous second night Passover Seder at Beit Simcha, which will include donations for Ukrainian Jewish relief. Go to BeitSimchaTucson.org for more information. Sign up to affirm freedom with an outstretched hand. Our playout this morning on Too Jewish comes from our pre-Pesach preview of Passover music. It's from the a cappella group 613. Their quite enjoyably ridiculous version of the story of freedom and liberation as a series of sea shanties. My friends, may you have a healthy week, a Shavua Tov, a good week, and a week, we pray, of peace.
There once was a time in Egypt land. The Jews were slaves in the desert sand. We cried out for an outstretched hand. Oh, let my people go.
Soon may our freedom come to bring us liberty, peace, and fun. One day when the Pharaoh's outdone, he'll let my people go.
Brave Moses with his shepherd's rod had heard the mighty voice of God. It said, tell Pharaoh clear and strong to let my people go.
Soon may our freedom come to bring us liberty, peace, and fun. One day when the Pharaoh's outdone, he'll let my people go. Oh, what shall we do with the middle matzah? What shall we do with the middle matzah? What shall we do with the middle matzah? Erlai in the Seder.
Hide it away, it's the Afikoman. Hide it away, it's the Afikoman. Hide it away, it's the Afikoman. Erlai in the Seder. Oy vey, let's get some prizes.
Sponsored by Two Jewish Radio Programs, Tucson, Arizona.